What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Inflation dipped last month. So is this the beginning of a slowdown?
We went from 8.5% to 8.3%. Phew, what a relief, right? No, not really. Like, inflation is still crazy high.
And how markets are absorbing the latest data. Plus, why teenagers could be the answer to a tight labor market. It's Wednesday, May 11th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Inflation is still near a four-decade high, with consumers paying more for groceries, dining out, air travel, and other services. But the Consumer Price Index, which measures what people pay for goods and services, dipped a bit in April, for the first time in 8 months, from an annual rate of 8.5% to 8.3%. Our markets reporter Gunjan Banerjee says stocks initially rose on the inflation news, but gave up those gains in later trading.
The reason for that is inflation has been the top concern for investors throughout the year. You know, it's dragged major indexes significantly lower from the record highs that they started the year with. And this latest data doesn't really show that it's calming down too much. You know, inflation remained higher than expected last month, and it seems like peak inflation may not be behind us.
The Dow shed 327 points, or 1%. The S&P 500 lost more than 1.6%, and the NASDAQ was down 3.2%. We'll talk more about what consumers should expect in just a few minutes. A Senate vote on a bill seeking to ensure women's access to abortion has fallen short of the 60 votes needed to advance. The final vote was 49 in favor and 51 opposed, with Democrat Joe Manchin joining all Republicans against the measure. Democratic leaders had acknowledged that the bill was going to fail, but saw the vote as an important political step should the Supreme Court overturn Roe v. Wade. We report exclusively that Elon Musk is being investigated by federal regulators over the late disclosure of his sizable stake in Twitter. Investors are required to submit notice within 10 days of when they take a more than 5% stake in a company. Musk surpassed that threshold on March 14th, but didn't submit his filing until April 4th. The delay allowed Musk to buy more stock without alerting other shareholders in a way that might change the stock price. Sources say the Securities and Exchange Commission is looking into the late disclosure. Separately, the Federal Trade Commission is looking into whether the delay violated antitrust laws. An SEC spokesman declined to comment. An attorney for Musk did not return a message seeking comment. Kohl's shareholders have rejected a push from activist investor McKellum to overhaul its board. The retailer was already struggling prior to the pandemic, and despite a rebound last year, Kohl's stock is now worth less than it was two decades ago. The company has been under pressure to make changes, including selling and leasing back real estate, as well as selling the entire company. We've reported that Kohl's is in the process of evaluating offers from bidders, including private equity firm Sycamore Partners and Canada's Hudson Bay Company. The number of people who died from drug overdoses topped 100,000 last year for the first time, according to preliminary data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That's a 15% increase from the year before. Health authorities say the spike reflects the proliferation of synthetic opioid fentanyl, compounded by the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic on users and people in recovery. Fentanyl is up to 50 times stronger than heroin, and tens of thousands of deaths were a result of using it alongside methamphetamines or cocaine, according to the CDC. Victims of last year's deadly condo collapse in Surfside, Florida, have reached a settlement of close to $1 billion with insurers and other defendants. 98 people died when the Champlain Towers South crumbled last June. It was one of the most fatal building failures in U.S. history. Engineers blame the collapse on a combination of problems, including design flaws, poor construction, and delayed maintenance. And an investigation by the Interior Department has found evidence of burial sites at 53 boarding schools for Native American children. That's according to a federal report, which says the U.S. government operated or assisted more than 400 boarding schools for Native Americans in 37 states between the years 1819 and 1969. Students were sometimes forcibly removed from their homes and barred from speaking their languages and practicing traditions. So far, the investigation has found that at least several hundred children died while attending the schools, but it notes that the actual number could be in the tens of thousands. The investigation was launched last June by Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, who is Native American. Our reporter Dan Frosch says the department plans to continue the probe.
The secretary mentioned today during a news conference announcing the release of the report that she was going to start traveling the country to meet with boarding school survivors, meet with families of survivors, to talk about what needs to happen next, and to also call attention to the plight of people who attended these schools and their families many generations later, who are still dealing with intergenerational trauma as a result of their loved ones' experiences at these schools.
Coming up, inflation eased in April, but consumers are still feeling the pain. We'll break down the latest data and what it means for your wallet after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
As we talked about earlier in the show, inflation ticked down in April. But it's a very small decline, less than half of a percentage point. And the same headwinds, from persistent supply chain disruptions born out of the pandemic to the war in Ukraine, are still putting pressure on prices. So what does the data tell us? Have we hit peak inflation? Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal economics reporter Gwen Gilford. Hi, Gwen. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Gwen, make sense of this dip for us. It doesn't exactly mean we've hit a peak here, right, when it comes to higher prices?
Yeah, I mean, we could have technically hit a peak. There are some sort of mathematical reasons why that headline rate, that 8.5 that is now 8.3%, probably will come down in the next few months. But one of the things that comes through in this report pretty strongly is that inflation pressures remain and might be building. So even if that big number that everyone focuses on, even if it does come down and we look back and like March was the peak, it doesn't mean we're out of the woods with inflation at all.
So let's talk about some of those persistent factors that continue to fuel high inflation. What are they right now?
The thing that really pulled that headline number down to 8.3%, that's the year over year, you know, April of 2021 versus April 2022, that came down in large part because gasoline prices fell. And, you know, they came down a little. March was like super, super high, right? Because Ukraine and all the panic that ensued, but they came down a tiny bit in April, enough to like drag down the index a bit, but they're already up close to record highs again. So we can't really count on that to keep bringing inflation down. Meanwhile, the things that did push up inflation in April, food continues to be really strong, and people are feeling that. That's one of the most visible prices for consumers. You know, it's something you notice every day. And then the other thing is we're starting to see services really gain momentum. And that's important because that's the part of the economy that sort of reflects the strength of the labor market. And up until now, you could kind of be like, oh, this is like a lot of supply chain disruptions. And, you know, to be sure, that's still a factor. And that'll resolve eventually as, you know, markets work out. But once the labor market starts to kind of become the engine of inflation, and it's already pretty tight, and people are, you know, you have a lot of hiring, wages are going up, that's putting a lot more income in people's pockets, that kind of fuels itself. And that can keep inflation persistently higher. And it makes the Fed's job trickier.
So, Gwen, you mentioned that gas prices ticked down a little bit. I don't know how many consumers may have noticed that, but is there anywhere else we're seeing prices start to recede?
There are some signs, like used car prices have come down like month against month for the past 3 months. So that's, you know, a welcome sign because used car prices have driven a huge share of the run-up in overall inflation over the last year. And, you know, for anyone who needs to buy a car, it's just awful. It's super painful. But, you know, prices are still really high compared to where they were, you know, a year and a half ago. But that's one place they've come off a little bit. And, you know, there are a couple weird things here and there. Apparel came down. Don't really know why. It could be that supply chains are improving. Could be a fluke. Like, we don't really know. We'll see what keeps happening with apparel. But yeah, nothing that has come down in a way that you're like, okay, we're coming down. Like, this is going to be a consistent pull on inflation.
So you did mention the Fed earlier. We know that the central bank is trying to tighten monetary policy to bring down higher prices while not tipping the economy into a recession. How is this latest reading on inflation data likely to influence the Fed's plans going forward?
Yeah, it's probably not going to cause a change in their stance. Like, they're already pretty hawkish. And, you know, they have fairly aggressive plans, although, you know, not as aggressive as some economists would like. But this reading, it's a disappointment probably, but it's not so dramatically different from what was expected that it would cause any kind of big change in their approach.
And Gwen, we are a few months out from the midterms, and inflation is certainly getting a lot of attention from both parties.
Yeah, I mean, today's reading, you know, we went from 8.5% to 8.3%. Phew, what a relief, right? No, not really. Like, inflation is still crazy high. People's costs of living have gone up a lot. They're feeling it. Like, a little dip in the number isn't going to change that fact. And this is probably the most pressing concern for politicians right now, because it's front and center for everybody in America. Like, price increases are really punishing right now. So the problem is, like, what can you do about it? This is a problem that is caused by this, you know, kind of chain reaction of all these, like, crazy events, like the pandemic, China lockdowns, invasion of Ukraine by Russia. And then you have the underlying strength of the labor market starting to pick up. And, you know, that's a good thing. We want people to be employed. We want our economy to be strong. We want people's wages to be going up. But these things build on each other. And, you know, that's what the Fed is in charge of bringing down. And, you know, we don't really know if they're going to be able to do that, how fast they'll be able to do it, if they're going to do too much. Like, it's all wild cards right now.
That's Wall Street Journal economics reporter Gwen Gilford. Gwen, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And finally, lifeguard, ice cream scooper, lawnmower. The teen summer job has long been seen as a rite of passage. This year, the teens may be lifesavers for businesses feeling the hiring crunch. Teen employment had been slowly declining for decades and then took a major hit in the aftermath of the 2008-2009 financial crisis, when many adults often took on part-time positions. But in this tight labor market, businesses are snapping up teens to help with retail, tourism, and hospitality. Unemployment for 16 to 19-year-olds is just above 10%. That's near a 70-year low. Itai Ben-Eli runs several restaurants around Houston with a lot of teens on staff. And he says that comes with its own challenges.
The major challenge is to get them confident in a workspace. The second thing would be to go over all the basics. There are certain things that we as adults take for granted because we've been doing them for so many years. But for a teenager who walks into a new job for the first time, A, it's very intimidating. B, there are certain things they don't think are natural. Because we're in the service industry, the first thing is from even to smile or how to use a POS system or to say welcome and thank you, because you're not in your natural environment, and sometimes those things get forgotten.
We have more from Eli on our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing. And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.